Hello and welcome to this latest episode of the Lost Baggage Podcast. I am your host, Brian Whitmer, joined today by my good friend, the founder of Lithuania Lacrosse, a subpar to mediocre referee in Canada, Ryan Dutkus. Ryan Dutkus, how are you doing today?
Hey, Bri. I'm doing really well, and I'm really excited to be here. So thanks for having me.
You've just told me, like right before I clicked record, that you've never done a podcast before. How excited are you to be speaking to me on your first time here, your debut?
Super excited. You know, you dodge my instant messages, you dodge my messenger requests. So now I kind of got you cornered. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah. So we'll just kind of go over the cliche. We're going to talk about your background in lacrosse. Like, I don't know much about Ontario lacrosse. Even being from upstate New York myself, like we were kind of talking about it before. It's a really tall barrier, for such a short distance. Tell me about your upbringing in lacrosse, and we'll kind of bounce the differences. You know, it was probably less than 100 miles if you were a bird, right? But, but there's a big lake in the way, there's a border, and we don't get up there to play. Tell me about your background in lacrosse. I don't even know where you played. If you played.
For sure. So I'm definitely in the category of played, but not necessarily played well. So I have a younger brother. So right now I'm 35, my brother Brett 32. And even growing up, like, my brother was always the better athlete. I was always the, well, whatever. And in the winters we played hockey, and summers was lacrosse. That was our typical kind of routine. And as the story goes, I started out in peanut, which is like the no contact, just basically skills and drills type lacrosse, where coaches are on the floor, and it's almost just like an organized daycare, I guess. And as the story goes, I cried and I quit. I said I don't want to play anymore, and that was it for a couple years. And then I went back in novice, which is kind of like 2 years, because you would have peanut and then you would have 2 years of tyke and then 2 years of novice and so on. So
yeah, we don't even have these names for, like, when people say, like, oh yeah, I played midget and bantam, and I mean, I don't know what that means. Like, we don't know what that means.
Right. Yeah. So I'm confused myself as to what exactly the age brackets are now, but
there are ages associated with those numbers, correct?
Yeah. So let's work from the other way down. So midget was like 15, 16, bantam 13, 14, peewee 11, 12, novice 10, 9, tyke 8, 7, stuff like that. So,
yeah.
So I'm still a relatively young kid. So now comes novice. I get back into lacrosse, but at the same time I'm playing baseball, and maybe it was t-ball at the time. I forget, but I remember baseball was in Welland, where I was born, and don't hold that against me. So
never heard of it.
I have baseball practice on one end of Welland, and at the time, lacrosse is in a neighboring city called Fonthill, Pelham. And so we have to drive maybe 20 minutes to get there. So I leave baseball practice early to get to lacrosse practice. And I remember on the way, I'm changing in the car, putting like my shorts on and my kidney pads and everything. And I tell my mom, and I say, like, Mom, I don't ever want to go back to baseball. So I had this real, like, not change of heart, but complete, as I got a few years older, my tastes changed, and I got back into lacrosse. And then I played lacrosse, box lacrosse, up until I think like second year bantam, first year midget. So like 14, 15, probably 15 years old was my last box lacrosse game. I got into reffing at 14.
Really? You started refereeing lacrosse at the age of 14.
Yeah. So
what age group do you don't referee other 14-year-olds at the age of 14. Do you referee those made up words for small kids then, or?
Yeah, well, totally, right? Like you got to dip your toe in the water before you fully jump in. The general rule of thumb is that you were supposed to be like 2 years older than the bracket that you were kind of officiating, just to eliminate the any like, hey, wait a second, you're the same age as me, how are you like policing me out here?
I'll beat you up. Yeah.
Yeah, but so at 14 though, at 14 you have no experience, you don't really understand. You understand how to play the game, but you don't understand how to officiate the game. So
definitely don't know all the rules, you know.
No, I mean, do you ever really know all the rules?
I'll admit, if you admit it, I don't know all the rules.
No, of course not. I don't think any referee could do that, because there's unknown scenarios that could come up in game and
that do come up.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And those are the things you want to be prepared for. I've been officiating since 14. In Welland, I also did a bit of like timekeeping. So like in the summer, I was doing like a few games on floor. I was looking after timekeeping in Welland. So I was getting like a ton of experience doing the game sheet, doing the shot clock, doing officiating. I was also paying.
That was my intro to definitely to officiating, but certainly to like a higher understanding of lacrosse was timekeeping. I remember my brother I don't know if he did it first. I did it whatever it was. It was like a summer job of just you go out there, you carry goals around, you put the cones out, you set up the field, and you sit there in the chair and you keep the time. It was for field lacrosse. But the summer league games, so like it's like three games back to back to back. And, you know, it's in Syracuse, New York. So you're seeing guys with, you know, who playing at Syracuse University, Cortland, Lemoyne, RIT, like you're seeing all these, you know, these obviously Syracuse, OCC, like you're seeing all the best players, you know, arguably in the world, some of the best players in the world playing summer ball, you know, three or four games in a row each night. And you have to sit there and watch and learn. You know, I was getting paid to understand the game. And that's when, you know, the referees would come over after the quarter break and, you know, they would just kind of talk about this happened, that happened. And like, you know, you'd ask them a question like, well, why wasn't this whatever? And, you know, just that way. And those referees happen to be like Matt Palem and Tom Abbott and like, you know, guys doing.
Yeah. Huge names. Yeah. In the game of lacrosse. Yeah.
You know, and that was my introduction to referee. I got into refereeing probably at the age of, I'd say 18, 19 was my introduction. I know I had white shorts and white long socks.
Did you have white shoes?
No, I would never have white shoes. We can talk about white shoes later. There's no way we're getting out of this podcast without talking about your white shoes. You refereed in those white shoes. I think the best thing that ever happened to me was learning the game by, you know, keeping score and, you know, watching a clock and communicating with referees and watching the game. You know,
for sure. Like it, like to go from the other side, like to be an official and then to sit in the box to watch other referees, and you gain an appreciation over like, say if I'm running the 30 second shot clock and I'm trying to find the referee and he makes a quick signal or something, and you kind of make a mental note to say like, oh, whoa, like, so when I'm refereeing, I need to make sure that I make a clear signal, because I've just made this guy's job tougher. And therefore, if the 32nd guy can't see me and he messes up or makes a mistake, then now my job on the floor is harder, because now coaches are going to be yelling, players are going to be yelling, the horn's going to be going when it shouldn't have. So like it's all kind of interconnected, and you really you gain that larger appreciation. And even for smaller things, like recording penalties, if the referee comes over and he just says like, Tover slapping, and you're like, wait, what did you say? Like, and now referee has to come back, re-explain himself. So like clear signals, clear communication. And so that's something that I've kind of taken away and brought into my own game by being like a mind.
So, and most of that stuff is you're learning that without really, like, it's not like you say, oh, that referee did this or that player did this, I should do that. Like it's subliminal. Like it's
subconscious.
It's subconscious. That's the word I was looking for. It's, you're not, you know, you're learning by observing, you know, you see like those kids in the stands, like they're just fixated on the game. If you ask them what they just saw, they can't repeat, they can't, you know, verbally communicate what they're watching, but they can go out there and do it and it'll be in their heads forever, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. you know, I always said that the better coach, I guess it applies to referees as well, but I always said the better coach has seen more lacrosse games, you know, these Bill Tierney's and like Dave Petromala is like, how many lacrosse games do you think they've seen? Like it's probably five digits, right?
Yeah. Countless.
Yeah. So, I mean, and then if you ask some, and I think this is where, you know, kind of the international piece comes in. Like, you know, these guys are like, oh, how do I get to be a better coach? I'm like, how many lacrosse games have you seen? Mm-hmm. You know, like, have you seen 10? Have you seen 100, 1,000? Like, where are you? You know, you need to see more. And, you know, there's obviously great services like the, you know, the Inside Lacrosse, like the scoreboard section where you just watch like unlimited Division III lacrosse, like during the season. But aside from that, you just need to watch more games, like, you know, and those opportunities don't exist as much over here.
Right.
Here being the Czech Republic, you know, or anywhere in Europe or abroad. That's what we need to get the higher caliber referees, coaches, players is, you know, see more games.
So and just on that note, like, so we even have that like issue in Canada that obviously Ontario has we've had a large amount of lacrosse. British Columbia had a large amount of lacrosse, and the other provinces have lacrosse but not to the same extent. And so when we come to our national tournaments and stuff like that, there's a real disparity in the experience of like that particular calendar year. A season might be the way that it's kind of staggered is that we might have a national tournament, but some referees might not have stepped on the field necessarily in that year to officiate seasons, but like kind of here in Ontario where the tournament falls in September, we have a full minor season in April and May. So kids from the age of, I believe, like 8 to 16, they play for 6 weekends in April and May. At the same time, we have high school lacrosse going on. So now we have like 14 to 19 year olds playing lacrosse. So like I believe I can't remember the exact year, but me and one of my good friends Brent Cologne, when we were training for I forget what year it was, maybe it was the year 2010 when we went to Manchester, we officiated for Canada at the tournament. And I think we did like 30 days straight of lacrosse. Like I was still in school. We just officiated lacrosse. So Monday to Friday, we were doing high school lacrosse throughout the day, maybe like 2 or 3 games a day around Southern Ontario. At night, we were either doing minor box lacrosse. Oh, sorry. What did I say? Sorry. We were doing high school lacrosse during the day. At night, we were doing minor box lacrosse. At night, we were also doing like junior to major lacrosse, and on weekends we were doing more minor field,
more all of it. More,
yeah. So like
the weekend was a mix. Yeah.
30 days is not really like, maybe that's not that big of an accomplishment, but like when we're doing at least 3 games a day, so like we probably did like 150, way more than that. And then I remember when we went to Manchester, the guy who picked us up in the taxi was a referee, and he kind of made a comment, something to like the effect of, oh yeah, like I'm kind of anxious to get on the field, like I haven't refereed yet. And I look at Brent and I'm like, what does he mean he hasn't refereed yet? He's like, we just did 160 games this year.
Each,
and this guy,
yeah.
this guy hasn't done one. Like, this is kind of scary. So, yeah, we're lucky to have the amount of lacrosse that we do here. And that has a direct correlation on the caliber of officials that, that are, well, in Southern Ontario.
I mean, there's also another motivation there. I mean, if you ref 160 lacrosse games, you know, we can lowball that and say you got $40 a game, right? And that's a, that's not chump change. That's great. You know, I got into officiating lacrosse strictly for the cash. And yep. There's no shame in saying that, right? Like, if I were to move back to the United States to, you know, well, in a normal world, I can referee lacrosse in upstate New York 7 days a week from today until I decide to stop. There is so much lacrosse. There's so little. There's you know, obviously plenty of competent referees, but there's always a just, you know, a lack of numbers of officials. You know, there's more kids playing now than ever, and the number of officials has not climbed to reach that. A lot of the same guys who were reffing 20, 30 years ago are still reffing now, and that next generation has not appeared out of nowhere. You know, U.S. lacrosse is, I don't know what, I think, you know, the CLA has like some really cool incentives for, you know, each program is required to like submit two guys or something like that, like to become officials, whatever. I don't know what you people do up there, but you in the U.S., like, man, if you just want to make some extra money, like that's the way to do it. I love officiating, but I started doing it for the money.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you don't need to comment on that if you don't want to, but
No.
Money's like, great.
It is there, of course. And then, but like, I love, I know it sounds so weird to say, but maybe it's because I was not a great player and I don't really have a championship to my name or something, but like officiating, I just love that. I love being a part of that intensity, that the adrenaline, everything like that. Like, I know that we're a vital part of the lacrosse game itself. But like, it's not about the money to me. I know those people are out there. I truly believe. And I truly strive for not perfection, but I guess my own like satisfaction.
Do I get to walk it back and say like I do also enjoy doing it? However, I really like getting paid.
Too late.
Yeah,
like it's a bonus.
Yeah.
Now, but like with that being said, like I think it's unrealistic to say like people could do it for free. Because then it becomes more of, and this kind of goes back to something we were talking about earlier about like experience. Like it's like, could I, as an assigner in good conscience, put a level one, so a brand new 14-year-old on the floor to do a, 22-year-old like lacrosse game? No, there's nothing there, but like in the end, like that's a referee. And if he wants money, that is like possible, but like in good conscience to the game of lacrosse,
no, absolutely
to the referees, to the players, you can't put that guy on the floor. So like there has to be some, like even the referee needs to look at himself and say like, hey, is this my like fifth game of the day? Am I just doing this game because there's nobody else? Am I doing this game because I want the money? So like there should be this element of like wanting to put the game to a better place, and when you're fatigued and stuff like that, I don't think that's the best option.
Yeah, and I guess I'll kind of build on that and say like I don't referee or I like to say officiate. It's like, you know, there's the whole umpire versus referee. And I just think official is non-gendered, and it's just the correct, you know, word for all sports. It's an official. I do it sparingly. I do it in the summers. I do a couple games over here. I don't like to do it more or less as a career, because I fear that I would start saying, like, well, this, you know, like this isn't as good as that other game, or this isn't up to my level, or, you know, this isn't worth the money, this game or that game, or, you know, this game got out of hand, so I want to be done with it. I like to do it sparingly. It's like one of those, you know, I don't want Christmas year round. I want Christmas once a year. You know, I want the holiday season once a year. I enjoy refereeing occasionally, and that way it's a break from playing. It's a break from coaching. It's like reintroducing that perspective on the game. And I know that there are guys who are like, you know, quote unquote career guys, like in the U.S. who think that all they do is officiate soccer, basketball, and lacrosse. Like, that is what they do. And yeah. I know that, like, financially it can work. Are you putting water in a jar, or?
I am.
Oh, I really thought you were in the bathroom, and that was going to be the.
Oh,
worst.
No, definitely not. No, I'm sorry. I should have thought of that.
That was the worst. I was like, oh man, like, we're 20 minutes into this. If we have to re-record this, buddy, I'm going to strike. Well, whatever I was saying is over. So let's move on. What are you doing with World Lacrosse and officiating now?
Yeah, so I'm very excited. I am on the men's officiating subcommittee. It's chaired by Mark Poland of Australia. And basically, we're looking after, like, we don't look after rules, and we're not looking after the education part of it. We're discussing mechanics, cleaning up our manual. So there's the rule book, which is the rule book, and then we also have the referee manual, which kind of just goes into more detail that, like, what, when we talk about some of the rules, how best to administer this mechanic every quarter to start the game, starts with a face-off. How do we do the face-off? What does it look like? Where do you stand? What are your pre-face-off duties? Stuff like that. So it just really expands. It's like that companion guide to
how to officiate without the rules.
Basically. And so that's a good chunk. We're talking about, like, selections, stuff like that, for Ireland, which should be next summer. How to fill people that can't make the rescheduled event, stuff like that. So it's I'm super excited to be a part of the committee. I'm very honored to be on it, it's really, I want to say, I don't know where it is in my career, but it's definitely an evolution, right? So when I talked about playing at 7 years old, peanut and crying, and then fast forward to me now being on a international officiating committee, like, it's very honored and very humbled by it. So I'm excited. We've been meeting once a month to kind of go over some stuff. But unfortunately, I think things are maybe just a touch slower just due to the huge expansion that World Lacrosse has gone under within, like, the last year and so, with pursuit of the Olympics, 6v6. Now it's just it's a huge project.
See, that was always the part I didn't care about. Like, three-man mechanics and, like, how to run a game, that's important. Like, where to stand and how to make a call. But I don't even know the word for it. Like, the dance that goes along with it, that's the part I always couldn't stand. like, oh, you should stand here and do this. You know, you should, oh, you're not in the right. And I don't like being nitpicked. I like to call push and slash. I don't like to be, you know, like, oh, you didn't, please throw your flag higher, or, you know, hey, get those arms a little higher, or hey, turn and face this way while signaling a goal. I was like, come on.
Right.
I'm not a perfectionist in this regard. So
that's actually, so thanks for bringing this up.
You're welcome.
It's actually a huge, so when I talk about like refining the manual, it's we're doing stuff like that where, they're no longer called supervisors. They were called supervisors, and then they were called assessors, the person that sits on the sideline, and their sole duty is to focus on the referees. They're not watching the game. They're focused on the officiating crew. And now in Netanya, 2018, they were using the term coach. So it was like a pivot from the superior and the low level employee, but now it's a coach and a mentee, the mentor and the mentee. That there was this not environment, but there was this like they're there to tear you down. That these assessors are there to do exactly as you say. Oh, you stood on the wrong blade of grass. You covered too much of the white line. Stuff like that. Like that's all gone, and it's now focusing on building you up. Like you did this very well, and I think that there still is. Like I know my personal. So I officiated in Netanya. I know my personal opinion on the system is that I think there needs to be a happy medium, and we haven't really found it yet. I know that speaking for myself, I'm incredibly hard on myself as an official. And after these debriefs, I wanted more. Like I was always asking for more, and because I knew that I had made mistakes out there, but they weren't being talked about. And not that I wanted to be brought down, but I wanted to talk about them, and I wanted to try and understand why I maybe made them. Like in this quarter, you missed a slash over here. What did you have? And I would say, okay, I know what you were talking about. I was too focused on the ball carrier, and I heard a noise out of like my left ear. There was something over there. I looked, I saw the guy on the ground. I didn't see it. So like there's stuff that I think is still worth discussing, but it can be framed in a way that it is a discussion, not like you missed the slash type thing, like, and be aggressive about it. So I think that there's like a happy medium that we still need to find where there is that constructive discussion, without kind of just like ignoring, some of the stuff that went on.
All right. So you're nerding me out a little bit. So we're going to stop talking about officiating. Let's talk about Lithuania. Okay. Yeah, this has run its course, buddy. We love officials. We love what they do for you. I enjoy doing it, but let's talk about the exciting developments in Lithuania. You and I shared the field one time for Lithuania's first ever. Was that the first Heritage Cup that Lithuania participated in? Or was that a different one?
That was the first one we participated in. Yes. Gotcha. 2018.
Yeah. So you and I have shared the field together. There was no goalie. You stepped in goal. I do remember one goal was my fault. Anyway, yeah. Uh-huh. We'll move on from that. Tell us everything we need to know about Lithuania lacrosse.
Wow.
Start from the beginning. There we go.
We're staffed with passionate individuals. We're focused on, I've had many emails reach out to want to coach Lithuania lacrosse, to want to play for the national team and stuff like that. And, I feel bad that I have to say no. And I have to explain like what we're focused on, and we're focused on growing the game at grassroots levels in Lithuania, and that's the priority.
How did this come about? Right, I am now aware that Dutkus is a Lithuanian name. You have some Lithuanian heritage. How did you just wake up one day like, oh, my name is from here. Like, we should go. Like, where did this come from? How did you put this into action? Like, tell me the story of Lithuania lacrosse.
Sure. I'll try to make it brief. So we have to go back to like officiating. I'm officiating at international events. And I noticed that there's no Team Lithuania. And I just think that one day it'd be cool. Previously it's kind of, I want to say unrealistic, just due to like life circumstance in school, low level job. So my grandparents, on my dad's side. So like, I guess I'm like 50%. My grandparents were the only two people that left Lithuania, and like the rest of the family is over there. My grandfather's side is still a very like big question mark. I've done some like tracing, but it's pretty hard to track some of that stuff down with Soviet records in this current time. My grandmother's side, we had a large relationship with brothers and sisters. They came over in like late 80s, early 90s. So there was that like dormant connection there. And just again, in the back of my head at some of these international events, once I started to travel and make note that there was no Team Lithuania, that I'm like, you know what, man, like it'd be pretty cool. You've refereed, you coached, you've done a bunch of stuff. Like when I talk about like career and like evolution, like, wouldn't it be like just fantastic to travel to like this new place and just do lacrosse? Like, you love lacrosse. Wouldn't it just be great? Like a dream come true to just develop lacrosse, play lacrosse, coach lacrosse, talk lacrosse. And so 2010 was really was a missed opportunity. After Manchester, I backpacked with some colleagues, and they wouldn't go to Lithuania. It was kind of too far. We kind of stayed, I think Austria was the furthest we kind of went, and then we went back to Germany and looped around to the Netherlands and flew home. 2012 was in Finland. I tried out as an official to go to Finland. I didn't make it. That would have been the perfect time. I'm not saying things would have started then, but that would have been obviously my first time there. And meanwhile, like I'm communicating with family over there to say like, hey, like I would love to come. But it just didn't pan out. Denver was 2014. And then in summer of 2016, Scott Nies from Israel Lacrosse, I head over there to do some work with them in the summer. And I visited Lithuania after there, saw family, and it was really like at that moment that everything clicked. It was just like, this country is beautiful, the people are so nice. And it was really like a question to myself of like, if you don't try, if you just go home and like never think about this again, like over the next 40, 50 years, however long I live, like I'm going to regret it that you didn't at least try.
Give it a shot. Yeah.
So that was really it. And then there was somebody else that, Mike Brazis out of Boston. Hingham Lacrosse. There's a little shout out for you. He made a Facebook group, and I bugged him to kind of get onto it, and it was really just a North American thing. Like it was not. There was no team. There was no nothing. But he made a group and was just posting some Lithuania stuff. Anyway, I kind of took over that, and I began messaging and really kind of like leveraging the international contacts that I've made throughout my career of officials here, coaches, even someone like you, Whit, like just branching out. And I know that we've worked on different things throughout the time. That was really it. I participated. They had a sports festival called Sportus Visiums, which is like sport for everyone. So it's like encouraging like a healthy lifestyle. And so it's come to this festival, try almost like a carnival, but like, if you want to try basketball, there's a small little like basketball thing. If you want to try golf, they have a small little setup. And so it was encouraging people to get more active, find a new hobby. I write to them. They say, yep, you can have a booth. So my booth was really a piece of plywood with some posters. I write to Ontario Lacrosse. Ontario Lacrosse gives me some supplies, and I fly over there. And I have my cousin with me, my cousin Druta. And she's like translating and helping me speak to some people and expose. And then from there, I have a lady contact me and say like, hey, I went to school abroad, like outside of Lithuania. And we played intercross. And I want you to help me develop lacrosse in my school. And we've kind of gone full force into this relationship where this school has been the college is a sports university, Lietuvo Sporto Universiteto, and that's a college, and then they have the elementary school, and so the elementary school is where we've been conducting like the majority of our things. We have an excellent support system through the English teacher in the school, Ingrida, and she's been like a focal point. And
what does that look like on a daily, weekly basis? Like, are they teaching in the same school as like lacrosse, like a routine program, or is there like a lacrosse team in the school, or does every kid in the school learn lacrosse? Like what does that look like on a regular basis?
Right. So we've gotten to that point now. And unfortunately this year has kind of altered some of our plans. We were supposed to have a lacrosse club at the tail end of last year, which has only started now. So during the week, the students, like the five in grades, like 5 and 6 and 7 and 8, they play maybe two times a week throughout the week, like in school. And then once a week, they have a lacrosse club after school. And so like it's just an extra opportunity for them to participate. So that's in our one school. We also have two other elementary schools that are also doing something on a smaller scale. And it's hard because, and I'll be honest, this keeps me up at night, and it bothers me to no end, is that it's great that we're flying in and we're like conducting clinics and things like that. But that's for like a week at a time. And I'm sure you will agree that if you just pick up a stick a couple hours in a week and then you don't pick it up again, like you, not that you lose, but you make no progress. Lacrosse is not something that you can just pick up. So So we do have people that are continuing to facilitate lacrosse lessons, but they lack the experience, unfortunately. And there's no, like, no one that we can.
You know what has to happen here, right? You know what has to happen.
Of course, of course.
We're both talking about, you got to get a ticket. Just move there. Come on. You know what's going to happen.
So it's actually funny you say that. And this has been, so when you talk about like Lithuania lacrosse and what it means to myself, and there's a huge like spiritual component here as well. Like my grandparents fled Lithuania during the war, and they had to leave everything, and as so many other people did, and they had to leave, and it was something that as soon as I got on the plane home my first time, I looked into like citizenship, like how do I do something like this? And there's actually like a clause in their constitution that allows for the restoration of citizenship for people, like descendants of people who left during occupation. So it's been a like 3.5-4 year long process of gathering documents, going through government red tape, and doing all this stuff, dotting the I's, crossing the T's. I submitted my, for the last two Januaries, I've attended a language class at Vilnius University.
Here it is.
No, get out of here.
Lay it on us.
And so like I submitted my request for the restoration of citizenship. And over the summer, I was granted citizenship of Lithuania. I'm a dual citizen, Aš Lietuvis. And last weekend, I went to the consulate in Ottawa, in Canada, to file my request for the passport. So
you're picking that up.
That's
soon.
A huge. Yeah, I hope so. Hopefully international mail is quicker than Canada Post or USPS.
So are you approved for that passport then, or are you waiting?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, so you're approved.
Sorry. Yeah. So it came in over the summer that like I was approved, but I either had to go to the consulate and give my finger stamps, or I had to do it in Lithuania itself. And at the time, right, so this is the end of July. I was supposed to go in September, and so like that would have been a much quicker process.
I was gonna go up there and meet you. We had
the big plans.
That was gonna be such a fun like 3 weeks. That was gonna be a good one.
I was looking forward to it so much. And again, that keeps me up at night. So so I have citizenship, and obviously, as you would know, because you've been living in the Czech Republic for the last little while, that citizenship changes, I don't know, just kind of like everything, that you don't need a visa, you don't need a relationship, you don't need to be married, you don't need something like that, you're a citizen. So when we talk about moving and doing stuff like that, like, it's a reality.
I am not a citizen. The citizenship requires a language test in the Czech Republic. I have residency here. I'm a family member of an EU citizen. I do not. I have a 5-year visa. I do not have citizenship. And I don't think I will have citizenship. They dropped the language requirement at the age of 65. And, you know,
wait it out.
That's a ways off. But if you last for 5 years and I reapply, it's a 10-year visa. And I don't mind filing a little bit of paperwork every 10 years, 5 years, whatever. My visa process was comically, you know, they told me there was going to be like more or less an interrogation. Like they framed it in the way, like, you will be asked every hard question about your relationship. You know, police will come to your door. They will inspect your apartment. If they come to your door 3 times and you're not there, your request will fail. Like, you must have your name on the mailbox. You must this. And I'm like, oh man, like, this is gonna be hard. And then we got like this letter in the mail. I was like, oh yeah, you can come pick it up now. Like it's ready. Like, I didn't have to do any of it.
Total intimidation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they also get, I'm not pumping up the United States of America here, but they do get folks from different backgrounds.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
But all right, I want to hear you speak. Is it Lithuanian? Is it? Is there a?
Yeah. So you know what? And that's a really funny question that, and I guess it's a bit of like ignorance on my part that I'm just assuming that everybody knows what country everyone speaks. And but it's not that obvious, I guess, sometimes is what I'm trying to say. So when somebody asks me like, oh, what do they speak in Lithuania? I'm just like, well, they speak Lithuanian. And then the first time I said that, I'm like, Ryan, how are they supposed to know that? Like,
I can't even put those three countries. Like, I can't put Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia. I can't put them in the right order. And like, I've been in Europe for however long now that the geography of that one, just that one gets me. I can't put those three in order. So, yeah, I would assume they speak Lithuanian.
So you want to know the easy way to think about it? It's alphabetical. Estonia is at the top. Latvia, L-A, is next. And then Lithuania, L-I, is last. So
here we go. The listeners have learned, and so have I.
There you go.
Outstanding.
So a little geography.
A few of the folks who have listened to this, and you know, people just kind of—I don't know if they can like just Spotify's podcast search like lacrosse, and this kind of comes up. But I have gotten like a couple strange text messages, like, "Hey, I want to go spend time abroad," and I got three guys moving to the Czech Republic in January. You know, situation pending. But what? Where are you guys? Like, what's next? If I find a guy who wants, or a girl who wants to move to Lithuania and do lacrosse and maybe teach English for a living, like, you know, are you guys there? Could you guys support that? Like, would you have a use for someone like that?
Of course. And I think that's where our wheels have kind of stalled at the moment, that there's also some people who have messaged like us and they've said like, hey, one girl in particular, she messaged us and said like, hey, I was just in school in the Netherlands and I played lacrosse and I see your Facebook group and where's lacrosse here? And I kind of say like, well, we're only in the schools where we don't have like a private club yet. And she's like, okay. So then I follow it up and say, well, like, wouldn't it be great if you could like pick up the torch and you, I'm still in school and that's a little too much responsibility. And I totally get that. Not everyone is, I think, equipped like yourself or me that our state of mind or our passion will maybe allow us to like, okay, you know what? I will eat noodles for a week so I can like coach lacrosse. Like other people have,
I call it the bulldozer mentality. I will bulldoze absolutely everything out of my way. Like oh, there's a financial risk, you know, associated with moving to the Czech Republic. Yep, doesn't matter. Bulldoze it.
We're going. Yep. We're going.
Oh, you know, I've got a little bit of an injury in my back. Bulldoze it. Go whatever. You know, like we need to pursue like whatever shiny objective is in my head. Like, okay, I want to get lacrosse sticks to, you know, some fictitious country. Moldova and Cyprus are on my list. I want to get Romania is on my list. I do have some aspirations, but in this current year, the shiny things need to wait. I do have some plans for global domination, but
that's exactly like kind of where we are though. Like, so it's interesting that World Lacrosse, I forget the name, I don't want to mess it up. But I believe it was at a conference last year or maybe the year before where they videotaped some, maybe it was from the coaching development seminars. I forget the title anyway, but one of his slides talked about growing grassroots programs. And they talked about the going wide versus like going deep and the two different styles of approaches. So, and without knowing that model, we've done the go in deep model where we've put all of our resources into these elementary schools as opposed to, and so the city we're in, Kadaini, which is not one of the top three populated cities in Lithuania. So when we talk about like the opportunity and the sheer amount of people that could play lacrosse, we've gone in a different direction because we've been approached and we've had a little success. And so we've pushed more resources into this particular area. So we've gone deep as opposed to going wide and shipping 20 sticks here.
Yeah.
20 sticks, 3 hours away. Like we're not ready for that.
I think that that's the,
we almost are.
I think that's the shotgun approach doesn't really work. And more or less when I say I want to go to Romania, right? I want to go to Romania and find the, you know, the woman that you got in schools there. I can't remember or pronounce her name.
Okay.
I want to find her in Romania. Like I want to find more of her in Czech. Like, you know, yep. I might be temporary, you know, like even, and you kind of referenced it before, putting people on a plane to go fly them over and teach lacrosse is a benefit for the person on the plane. It's not a huge benefit. It's tourism. It's not a huge benefit for the people on the ground. You need to find the people who are going to be there the next 10, 15 years who are going to do the heavy lifting week in, week out and teach lacrosse to people who've never seen it before. And right. Ideally, that's a person with experience. You know, not to pump my own tires, but I'm the cat's meow. You know, I'm someone who's played for 20 plus years. If you can have 20 more of me teaching these programs, then we're skipping all these, you know, like, hey, I don't know how to teach offense. I can teach passing and catching, but I don't know the rules. You know, I don't know. Oh, we're supposed to play a game. What do we need to play a game? You know, like what are the rules? You know, ideally you have knowledgeable people teaching lacrosse, you know, and that's what I would like to do in, you know, if I go to Bulgaria for another camp, you know, what I was trying to do with the Bulgarian guys when I'm there is plug these guys in with the experience because they're going to be the ones, you know, Nick and Lou, like those guys are going to be there the next 10, 15, 20, you know, their whole lives. They're Bulgarian guys. You know, I want to give them experience so they can be those roots. And as you said, go deep. You know, those are the guys who are going to make it happen or not. So, yeah. So what's next for Lithuania? I mean, you know, obviously, like, situation pending. Like, what do you guys got going on?
So let's start with how we plan the year. World Lacrosse, we received a World Lacrosse grant for equipment over the summer. And the original intent was for me and a colleague, Kevin McCloskey, we were going to go over for in September with you and run clinics, participate in the Olympic version of that sports festival. So every year they hold Olympic Day, which is now the state funded festival where everybody gets to try sports. So we did that last year. We were going to do it again this year, got canceled. But we were going to go over, bring equipment, and run instructional camps. And we structured it so that two of us would be going over in September and two other colleagues would be going over in October, Anthony and Will. So that we would basically try to correct that like 1 week and then missing in action, that we would have like a rigorous week and a half of instruction, and then there would be a follow-up, not exam or like test, but there would be that follow-up instruction in a month to further reinforce like proper habits and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, some staying power. Right. Like
right. So where we are right now, we're still just doing we've expanded our equipment into two new high schools. So for the last 2 years, where we've had practices in the elementary school, those kids have now graduated, and they said to some of their instructors and Ingrida that like, hey, like we're going to these new schools, but they don't have lacrosse. Like, what do we do? I want to play lacrosse. And so it was very easy. Like our decision, like what we need to do is that we need to provide these new schools with equipment. And that was the like the basis of that World Lacrosse grant, is that we needed to adequately supply these new schools with sticks, balls, nets, things like that. So that's where we are right now. Unfortunately, we couldn't travel there to give that in-person instruction. We've been writing. It's been a kind of a long process, but we've been writing, and I know I've asked you about this like separately, but just ways, like I know that we're all experienced in lacrosse, but necessarily we might not have that ability to maybe translate it or write it down in a way that somebody else can interpret it. So we've been writing a, for lack of a better word, like a textbook, like a manual of like what lacrosse is, because that's part of the, like, that's really part of the challenge, is that my first time over there and I'm talking to people that don't know lacrosse, they're asking questions that I would have never considered. They ask me like, how fast does it go? And I mean, like, I know it, how fast it goes fast, but like how fast, like 5 kilometers an hour, 100 kilometers an hour. So it was just like, there was that. And then somebody says like, what's the point of lacrosse? Like, what do you do? And I say like, okay, well you have to put the ball in the net. And
I believe the Japanese actually, I mean, it's a story. I don't know how actually true this is. I've never heard this story twice, but it needed to be put in the rule book that the team with the most goals wins, because there was teams in Japan who were not quite sure who was the winner of the game, because it did not say in the rule book that the team with the most goals wins.
Right.
Sure. Maybe the team with the best goal wins, like the coolest goal.
Yes, 100%. And that was as crazy as that sounds. But if you bring something brand new, completely new, unknown, and you give it to somebody and they don't know what to do with it. And so like, that's been a huge part of it, is like, yes, this is how we play, but it's getting them to want to like buy in, to get invested, to become educated. And like, this is how you hold the stick. No, don't pick that up with your hands. Don't use your hands. Like, you have to use the stick. Why can't I use my hands? And it's just like, it's so there's that element as well, because there's, and I'm sure, I mean, Czech Republic's in a different
stage,
but like, some people, I think if you're like 45-ish in Lithuania, at some point during the early 90s, there might have been one lacrosse game on a channel at some point. Like, yeah. That's their
exposure
to lacrosse. Yeah. And like, that's okay. Like, I mean, that's better than starting at zero, but still, you have a lot of questions. What do you do? And then, another common question that I've had from like people outside of Lithuania is like, what are you teaching? Are you teaching box? Are you teaching field? And really at that point, it was just lacrosse. Like I'm just doing lacrosse.
I hate that question. When people are like, well, you know, are you teaching me box players or field players? I'm like, man, like it doesn't matter. You know, like, I've got kids who I teach at Smekov who, we don't have a box, so I mean, obviously you're teaching them on a field, but due to the tiny size of these seven-year-olds, like, I use a box goal and I use a box goalie, you know, with no boards. And then, you know, we play against Radetin with boards. They, you know, they're going to come to us and play without boards. Like, it's just lacrosse.
Right, right.
All stick.
Exactly.
So I'll kind of – how I want to finish this up. We got about 1 minute here. I want to – yeah, I told you that last 15 minutes is going to blow by.
Yeah.
I told you that.
But
I want you to say I don't even care what you say, but I want you to say it in Lithuanian. I want you to close out the thank you for listening to this latest episode of Lost Baggage Podcast with Ryan Dutkus, founder and chief capitan of Lithuania lacrosse, world lacrosse referee aficionado. I'm gonna hit the stop button after you're done speaking Lithuanian to close out this episode. Go ahead.
Labas. Aš esu Rainis Dutkus iš Kanados. Man labai patinka lacrosas ir noriu, kad Lietuvos vaikai išmoktų jį žaisti. Labai ačiū.
All right. I'm impressed. Thank you, and we'll see you guys next time.